Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Javier, how did Liv Morgan do against Becky Lynch in easily the biggest moment of her career tonight in Memphis, Tennessee?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yep.
That's pretty much it. I mean, you know, it was not the – wasn't bad, wasn't good. It was okay.
I thought she was the weaker link in the match, and that's, you know, you could say that about a lot of really good polished women wrestlers against Becky Lynch. So that's a way of saying nothing. But I just didn't think the crispness of execution was there. I thought the match structure was good. I thought Liv's body language and the video package beforehand was good. I thought she showed it pushed the limits, but the agony of defeat without kind of the stereotypical crying that off, you know, for a number of years women were doing too often after big matches, getting, you know, they were kind of playing up the emotions. But I didn't watch and go, oh, she doesn't belong in there. Like, I've seen some women on, you know, AEW Dynamite in AEW Dynamite's existence who are like, they shouldn't be on national TV. I didn't think that about her, but I didn't think, wow, this was a coming out moment of her as a big star.
Those were my exact same thoughts. I when they started with that catch as catch can, you know, segment in the beginning, and I was seeing how clunky it kind of was at that point, that I was like, wasn't really feeling it. And some moments throughout the match, I mean, not that it was like bad and turn off, but you could tell that the crowd wasn't really like super into it. And so it, you know, again, I'm not gonna say she wilted, but did not like rise to the that level, to, you know, to really like open eyes. I don't think she opened,
yeah,
you know, eyes in this case. That's not to say that she was bad and needs to get fired, but
sadly, we need to clarify that when it comes to WWE and Vince McMahon. You know, I mean, this was, let's just make this really clear for the record, Javier. This was not a fireable performance for Liv Morgan after reaching the pinnacle of her career, or trying to. I don't know. Is it a pinnacle if you get a title shot and you want to win but you don't? I guess we have to figure out how to define that. But this is not a fireable offense by any means. But yeah, not like, you know, oh my God, they've been really missing the boat on her for a while. So my take on this is, and I'm all for this, by the way, I like the idea of moving people into top spots for a feud. It's not WrestleMania, not SummerSlam, and they get a chance. It's fresh. It felt to me way more novel and interesting, even if the match quality isn't at the level of what it would be against somebody more polished, because it was fresh and different. I didn't know how good the match was going to be. I figured Becky was going to win, but there were enough near falls and the structure of the match and the story they told was strong enough. You know, I got wrapped up in it. And so that to me is more interesting. Seeing somebody, again, it's about the journey, lives on a journey. I think she comes out of this as a more pushed, more established. Fans will be more invested in her, but she's going to move on to a heel who's, you know, more like Doudrop as opposed to at the top. I don't see her being somebody to unseat Becky. I don't think they do, you know, a 3-month program with Liv and Becky at this point.
Yeah, it's great to have seen her, you know, involved in this, and I'm assuming it's going to continue because she mouthed at the end that this is not over. So I'm assuming we're going to be seeing something more at day one. So at least there's gonna be a little bit more to this, but yeah, I mean, I want to definitely say that, you know, did not hate it, because you really have to underscore that, you know what I mean?
And particularly
when it's someone as like lovable and great as Liv Morgan, and that everyone wants to see succeed. And the other thing is that we don't know if it's just that I don't know how much repetition they have with each other, because sometimes that, you know, is also a factor in these kind of matches. So
totally. And I mean, getting reps is just, wrestlers aren't getting reps these days, you know, I mean, they do some house shows, but not as many as they used to. And sometimes they work house show style, but you know, it's going to show up. You know, it's one of the things I like about AEW Dark. You know, so many wrestlers are getting, you know, kind of weekly reps, and the match length is full, you know, full length matches. So You know, it's something WWE has to be concerned about, especially if they're just going to be bringing people up, you know, who have only worked in their system. It's going to start to show up and affect storytelling. So, yeah. In terms of the video package on Liv, the Liv promo earlier, the Becky promo, I am like I'm not going to compare everything to AEW, but if this comes to mind too, it's something I don't think AEW does well, which is for an hour and 40 minutes, get you excited, use the tools at their disposal to get you more excited and interested and invested in that week's main event. You know, they'll mention the top of the show and then they just do another hour or 40 minutes of stuff. And then boom, there's the main event. And suddenly you're supposed to be really like invested in Cody versus Andrade. And they might show a little highlights. They might not of what's gone on with them, but I like just an hour and a half or so of little here, little there, a comment there, a video package here, a promo there. And I thought they did that. Not only did they pack it in before the opening match, the cage match tonight, but then they did an effective job with that leading up to the main event. Even if it doesn't make you more invested because you're already invested, it sends the message to the uninvested. This is a big enough deal. We're reminding you over and over again that this is happening and framing it in a way that communicates this is a big deal.
Yeah, and what you mentioned a few times where WWE says, you know, what Vince McMahon says is, you know, have a couple things you remember, and that's how you do it, is by just having those little things spread throughout the show, that's going to be the most important thing, what you're looking forward to, what you're building to. So, yeah, and in terms of that, I think they did a really good job. I was invested in the match, and I thought it was we were going to actually have a finish for this one. I didn't think they were going to do, you know, I didn't see, like, the pieces where we get a screwy finish. I don't consider, you know, Becky holding the rope screwy. You know, that's a heel, what a heel would do.
Yeah, yeah.
So, totally. You know, but, you know, so I expected to actually for this one to get a finish. And we did, and it's just that I'm talking about the performance of the ring, but everything else around it, the setup and the interviews that they did and the stuff that they said, and it felt like a big deal. And for that, I give them all the kudos.
They do 52 main events here on Raw, 52 main events, or 51 this time on SmackDown, because they'll, I think, have a best of show on New Year's Eve. But they got to come up with main events. They got to have matches that people care about, and they can't just do the same ones over and over. You know, they've got to take advantage of whatever depth they have on that roster with people who can be elevated. And then you got to put in the elbow grease. You got to make people care about it, or at least convey to people who don't care that you care enough to at least attempt to make them care. And I know that sounds convoluted and ridiculous, but I mean it. Like, sometimes you're more likely to invest in something that you're not invested in if you think the person selling it to you is invested in it. And it makes you feel, you know, that it's something more important. So, all right, well, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then we'll move on to phone calls and emails. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 6th, 2021. And I am Wade Keller, the editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and pwtorch.com. And also the host of the Wade Keller podcast and post shows. By the way, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net joining me on tomorrow's flagship. It'll be a Tuesday edition this week. You are encouraged to send emails with questions or topics or comments for Jason and me to talk about. It's a chance for you to hear us branch out from the main topics we talk about after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, or just expand and follow up on things we have talked about on the post shows that you've been listening to. That's a blue logo show. They're both free. This is a red logo show. Subscribe by searching Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribing to both, and hit refresh every day to see what pops up. We just put up a 5 years ago flagship on the blue logo show earlier today. And I was like laying out how to turn Roman Reigns babyface. I'm like, turn him heel. Fans will think he's more cool. What he's doing isn't working. And then there'll be a murmur of people going, hey, he's cool now. Turn a babyface. There was like lots of really interesting conversations to look back on about where we were 5 years ago compared to now. Kevin Owens in the top mix. And we're talking about how his Universal title reign was being portrayed. So check out those best of shows. It's good, kind of good background while you're doing other stuff, or heck, you can just play it and pay full attention to it. So search Wade Keller and grab both of those feeds. The other voice you hear today is Javier Machado. He is a PWTorch.com contributor, PWTorch VIP podcaster, and often joins us at the end of the show or near the end for our roundtable segment. We are expecting Javier, by the way, because we want to do a roundtable segment, somebody else calling in to fill your shoes. So if he comes through, it'll be fun. Javier, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Wade.
I need you to say more than that. I'm not at all ready to start talking again. I was definitely counting on like 15 seconds to catch my breath. Tell us about what you do for the Torch.
I generally do the New Japan Pride podcast. Currently on hiatus because of work situations during Christmas. Hopefully coming back when for Wrestle Kingdom. And I'm actually starting to catch up now on Strong. I got like a month of Strong to watch, and not to mention all the other stuff going on. Lots of going on in New Japan. So I do New Japan for a podcast, and I do the primers for the pay-per-views for AEW and WWE and Impact when I'm caught up. I'm behind on Impact also. But so I do the primers for those two.
Awesome. So let's give out the phone numbers and welcome people to give us a call. The number, if you want to join the program here and join our conversation on the program, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That is how we know that you want to be on the show. It also moves you to the top of the queue, so we know that you're there. So push 1 when you call. You can also email us if that works better for you. Just email Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. If you want to hear the show live, by the way, and you're wondering how because you download the show on your app, you can go to wadekellerpostshow.com. After within 5-10 minutes of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown ending, we live stream the shows audio only, and you can find that at wadekellerpostshow.com. And you can also go to @PWTorch on Twitter. I link out a direct link to the live stream there, @PWTorch, usually around the time the shows end or a minute after. And you can also go to, and this is the best yet, PWTorch.com, and click on my reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown that I do live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. And at the top and off in the bottom, there is a link to the direct stream. So that's the easiest way to live stream us, and you are then welcome to become a caller. All right, Javier. How about we move to phone calls?
Fine with me.
Okay. Someone's going to protest that one of these days, and I'm going to be all thrown off. Like, no, I want to bring something else up first. All right. Well, we'll start with Mike in Atlantic City. Mike, thank you for calling. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. I thought it was a good Raw. You know, since the draft started, you know, and ever since the draft, I think Raw has been – really good, and has been the better show actually out of Raw and SmackDown, and the wrestling has just been more fresh. You know, it's been better, and it's been a more fresh show. And the main event with Liv and Becky, I thought it was a really good match. It I think when you asked the question, you know, did Liv pass? You know, because I think this was a test for Liv. You know, I would say she did. You know, I think she did good enough where she deserves a rematch and she deserves another chance. I think we'll get a rematch at day one. She probably won't win the belt then, but, you know, I hope next year sometime she does win the title. You know, I think she has so much passion for the business. I think she can get better and better in the ring the more she works with talent like a Becky. So as long as they keep giving her time in the ring, I think she can get better and better. And I think she deserves more chances next year, and I hope she gets it. And online, you know, Dutch Mantel, he brought up a good point today. He was saying about how Liv Morgan, you know, because I know, Wade, you were wondering about Liv's character, like what was it supposed to be? And pretty much, like he was pointing out online, it's supposed to be, I think, where she's like Daniel Bryan. You know, she's just a genuinely nice person. She's the underdog. You want to root for her. And she has a lot of passion. And she's just your average person that you want to root for. And I think that's what Liv's character is supposed to be. And you guys agree? That's what I see.
Yeah, I mean, if she wasn't, like, coming out and trying to be all titillating and shaking her stuff and acting like she was – you know, on some of her ring entrances coming out to get votes on a wet t-shirt contest that day. She's very much like Daniel Bryan, or more like him in that way. She hasn't come out just as sort of the serious athlete, you know, guy or girl next door type thing. I think she's been in search of a character. And I think what Dutch is describing, what you're describing, is probably what's best for her. Unfortunately, I think she went down the road, you know, where she was produced to go down a different road that I felt was a little behind the times and frankly just beneath her, because I think what you describe is where her natural character falls. It feels authentic, and the direction they're going with her, I think it matches what they're doing right now with her and certainly what they did with the video package. Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, on TV, because I do get a little bit of on Twitter from her, but that character hasn't really shown up on TV for the most part. With this video package, this is the most I've actually known about the character, because so far it's been so many start and stops and false starts with her and different directions that they've tried and like just throwing everything at the wall, that it's been hard to really figure out what she was. Plus, I didn't follow her on NXT because I forgot one of the NXT guys. I don't know. I think it was Kelly Wells who mentioned, you know, talked about her on her, you know, who she was. In,
Yeah.
So I didn't have that. So I didn't really get who she was until this.
You're more typical than someone who's watched every minute of NXT for years.
Yeah, and then and what really like struck home is when she said that she was the sixth child, and I'm like, oh, that makes sense now.
Yes,
that her entire character makes sense. I mean, even the titillating stuff, it's someone trying to figure out what to do and not really have a direction, and that it makes her entire character make sense.
Right. Yes, that does. You're right. That I mean, had they been just established that earlier. It felt last second to me, but better late than never. Yeah. All right. So, Mike, back to you.
Yeah, I think the story, I think it's there for Liv to win the title, you know, one day, and I hope she does. The video package that they aired tonight, I think I've seen that before. I think it was the documentary. Didn't they air that on the network last year sometime? It was really good. I know that. I know I've seen it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, but,
So what else, Mike? Any other topics you want to bring up?
Yeah, with Bianca Belair, I think she had a really good match with Doudrop. I think I didn't like the finish, the count out finish, but I get why they did it, you know, to protect Doudrop. And they'll probably have a rematch. I was really hoping to see Belair win, especially with the kiss of death. That would have been a really good spot. That would have looked impressive. I was hoping to get that spot, but you know, we'll probably get it in the rematch. But yeah, that was a really good match. What'd you guys think?
Yeah. I mean, it was, might as well go into that a little bit more. Javier, Doudrop as heel against Belair. It's keeping Belair occupied because Liv Morgan's in the top babyface challenger spot right now. And I'm fine with that. People have to rotate in and out. I mean, it's just, that's been done in all of wrestling history. It doesn't mean they're down on her at all. You know, Belair is going to be just fine. And in a way, this is to establish that Doudrop is in the realm, same general level as Belair. They don't want to bury her. I think they think she's talented. They might even think they have something in her character, with or without the name as a factor. That might be something they regret or are embracing and still like. But the finish, doing a finish where somebody just walks out is always going to be, controversial to endorse. I'm more okay with it when it's not done just to get out of doing a finish when you could have done a finish and it wouldn't have been a problem. Like, you can recover from it. This situation, I can see WWE making the case. Hey, we don't want Belair to lose. It's going to look like we're demoting her. She's already not with a belt, not in the top spot. She's been moved out of that. But if Doudrop loses, even in a competitive match, it sort of ends it there. You know, Belair, we thought she was better, and she is. How do you feel about WWE finishes and the rationale for when they don't do the clean finish? And would just doing a KOD, pulling it off, getting a clean win, and then finding a way for Doudrop to, quote, get her heat back in another way, have been a better approach? And is there an option C?
Yeah, the because I was thinking about that, because in a vacuum, I'm fine with the finish, because you're telling a story and it's going to go on, you know, from there. They're going to have another match together and eventually you're going to get a payoff to the whole thing. It's just, I really wish that not every single feud goes through that, through those motions.
That's the thing. In isolation, so much in WWE, in isolation, they can make the case and be okay with it behind the scenes. Like, oh yeah, this is the right finish. But you got to step back and go, did we already do a count-out finish on this show? Have we been doing that in every circumstance like this? And are we conditioning fans to get invested in a match to really not be invested in the idea that a finish is the payoff to your investment? And if you do that too much, it more than offsets the rationalization of what you're trying to avoid, quote, losing, or the damage that you think you're going to do if instead you do a clean finish.
Yeah, and the thing is that, because I'm thinking, like, how do other organizations deal with that? And I realize it's the whole sports, like, feel to things. Because if you watch a New Japan match and you're in a situation where you have a Belair and a Doudrop situation where you're going to continue going on from there, well, how do you do it? Well, early on in the match, someone's leg gets hurt, and then that is how the other person wins. So it's not necessarily, you know, like, so you could tell the story of, like, well, if it weren't for this thing happening that created the weakness, wouldn't have lost. So if we wrestled again, you know, things would be different. And, you know, so that's one way you can do it. It's just that they don't lean to that. They lean more on the storytelling aspect of wrestling. So, you know, and they play on the roll up a lot. They play on, you know, a lot of the distraction finishes a lot. And it seems like every single feud has to go through that. That's a distraction finish. And what it does is that when you have a situation where someone loses, you know, like how Robert Roode lost today, he just lost in order to set up a Ziggler thing. So it's like you're signposting for the audience that, okay, if this person loses for real, there ain't nobody. You know, so so that's kind of the thing. And yeah, I mean, in a vacuum, having a fake finish is fine in this story, but it just gets frustrating. Plus, it was such a good match, you kind of wanted to have an ending, you know, because I like that match a lot, and it was just, you know, it's like getting three quarters through the weight of the book, and then you're missing the rest of it, you know. So
that same book publisher, the same author, wants you to keep buying their books.
Yeah, I actually have that because when my father was alive, he was reading. I had him read the Sword of Truth series in Spanish, and the translator dropped off after like three quarters of the series had been done. So he never finished, reading the series because they never finished translating them. It's like you kind of felt like, you kind of feel empty. So like, why invest in the series if you're not going to get an ending to it?
Yeah. Yep. All right, Mike. Anything else you want to add?
Yes, assuming Liv doesn't beat Becky, you know, at day one, do you think we're going to get that Belair-Becky rematch at WrestleMania? I feel like we got to get that match, and we got to get Belair, you know, we got to have Belair get her moment and get the title. But I think for at WrestleMania, I think that would be, you know, a really good thing to do, have Belair face Becky and Belair win the title from Becky. And then you could always push Liv, you know, later on in the year. What do you think?
Yeah, we were talking on the SmackDown post show about, you know, is it just inevitable Charlotte and Sasha at WrestleMania? Is it now, is it inevitable it's going to be Becky and Belair? Javier, I mean, is that the right thing to do? Does it seem like that's where they're heading?
Yeah, I mean, right now as things stand, without any anything outside happening, I would guess that would be the biggest match you could get. Unless you have a Rousey returning, or you know, they've been talking a lot, and I've been seeing a lot about Trish Stratus online lately. So if it's anything like, you know, when you're following the movie business or the video game business, all of a sudden they start talking about this old movie or this old video game, and that's because there's a remake coming. So you know, I mean, that, you know, I know it's because of the anniversary, but you know, with a lot of that talk, That would be interesting too, if Stratus comes back to like stick up for Liv Morgan kind of thing. you know, something like that would be interesting. So outside of something like crazy outside of the box like that, yeah, Bel Air is the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Mike, any closing words?
Yeah, just that, I mean, if you do Bel Air and Becky and Sasha versus Charlotte, I mean, that's a, you know, a double women's main event right there. I think that would be great for the woman if they do that, you know, at WrestleMania. So, yeah, I'm all for that. Those two matches, you know, that would be great for WrestleMania. It's both of them, you know.
And part of the key is...
That would be great.
Part of the key, yeah, the key to make that fresh is to keep them away from each other, but also keep them relevant, you know, have... Make sure that whatever Bel Air is doing, we're invested in the meantime. And, you know, have in mind, how are we going to pivot to that? Is it just a Royal Rumble win? Only one, you know, either Bel Air or Sasha just to win. Why do they win? What's the story there? How did the other one get a title shot? And, you know, I mean, they have two nights now, so they can really tell it. They can, there's going to be a payoff for investing in the story and getting fans following along week to week in the story, because you can actually pay it off now with a full-fledged match now that they've got the two nights. Cool. Mike, always good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys have a great night.
Yep. Yeah, you too. All right. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers who are joining us live right now, and that applies, of course, to all of our shows. So don't be shy and join in the conversation. Well, now go to William in San Diego, California. William, good to hear from you again. What did you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, how you guys doing?
I'm good, good.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the main event a little, or rather the build to it, specifically during this show. I agreed that I think they did a pretty good job having the interviews backstage and the live video package and everything. But something that kind of stood out to me, and it seemed pretty ludicrous, is 7:30 Pacific or 10:30 Eastern hits, and Becky comes out commercial. I mean, it's kind of annoying, but you know what? They do it all the time. You kind of grow, get used to it. So fine. You know, they come back from commercial, Bobby Lashley backstage interview, Liv Morgan video package, Liv Morgan makes her entrance, commercial again. And then now it's been like 15 minutes or whatever since Becky's entrance, and she's just been standing there in the ring. And I don't know, what do you think that does to the live crowd? Like, did you get a sense that hurt the crowd in attendance? Because I didn't think the crowd was particularly super hot for this match, although you could argue that maybe the build in general from previous Raws wasn't that great, or that they maybe the quality of the match wasn't something that got them super excited, especially when you had that opening match with Kevin Owens and Big E with the steel cage. So yeah, what do you guys think of that in particular, the crowd reaction and those commercial breaks right before the main event, kind of killing the mood?
Absolutely. So I do think that's a problem. I don't know that they are going to move away from that, because they're producing a TV show more than they're producing a live event. But that said, Javier, we know we've had on-site reports telling us, you know, that it's tough to have the big star come out and then just stand in the ring for 8 minutes before the match begins. I didn't sense that there was a great buzz in the arena during formal ring introductions. And I thought if Liv was crestfallen over the lack of real emotional reaction to the ring announcer introducing her, I didn't think Becky got like a superstar pop when her name was announced either. Sometimes it's the miking in the building, and the fact that, you know, the reaction wasn't real strong for Becky means maybe the reaction was even, you know, stronger for Liv, and it didn't come across on TV. We did end up with an on-site correspondent letting us know that they were going to be there tonight. Just a reminder, everybody, if you attend a live Raw or SmackDown or Dynamite, let us know if you're willing to come on and talk to us about the in-arena experience. It's moments like this that would be really interesting to hear from somebody who is in the building. You can email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com and let us know. A couple of our usual Memphis correspondents were not available to join us today. Yeah. So, Javier, your thoughts on that? Crowd reaction, ring introduction tonight specifically, and then in general, the policy of let's get the big star out there so people don't tune out, even though all we're trying to do is buy 8 more minutes of them staying tuned because we're going to cram in commercials and video features.
Yeah, I mean, if the star does something to engage with the audience, that would be one thing. So I don't know how they do that, or some stars do and some stars don't. So that would be, you know, one thing is like when AEW was down here, MJF would actually, you know, cut a promo on the crowd, or a wrestler would cut a promo on the crowd before they came back from commercial. So, you know, the crowd was already hot, you know, against it. So that you could mitigate some of that stuff if you do that. If they're just sitting around, which is my understanding, is they're just sitting there for like, you know, the 30 minutes that you're waiting for the stuff to come back. Yeah, I mean, it's not good for the crowd. Also want to bring, you know, I tend to be the one who brings up a lot. 3-hour show, you know, by the halfway, there was a point where I looked down and I looked at my watch and it was right as Miz was coming out. And I'm like, oh, we still have an hour left to go. Because at that point I was really enjoying the show. And I'm like, there's still an hour left. So, you know, that combined with, yeah, I mean, you started off really hot and you had the Belair match, which was also really hot. It felt to me that they were hitting the whole Liv Morgan, how the fans are with her so hard that it made me feel like they felt like they weren't. And they were trying to overcompensate by really, having commentary saying, what a spitfire she is and how great she is. Kind of like overcompensating not just how she has been booked, but, you know, the fact that like the build probably maybe not being as strong and some misfires along the way.
Yeah. All right. William, any follow-up on that?
Yeah. Moving on to another topic. I want to talk about Bobby Lashley making his, return, although he hasn't really been away for too long. We saw him at Survivor Series. Do you think this is leading up to a Fatal 4-Way at Day 1?
That crossed my mind. They've done so much to invest in this being a 3-Way, a triple threat match, Javier. But, I mean, they've got some – I mean, what do they have? Let's see. It's a 6, so they got the 13th, the 20th.
3. I already looked it up.
And the 27th. Yeah, I mean –
those are my notes.
Yeah, they've got – they got plenty of time if they want to turn this into a Fatal 4-Way. Do you hate it? Do you like it? Do you just lean a little towards or against it? How do you feel?
I mean, it makes sense the way they're telling the story. Because I mean, those literally were on my notes that when I saw how far away we are from Day 1, I'm like, well, I know SmackDown's the one taking a week off. This felt like there were, you know, like the hype for Day 1 was like the go-home show almost. And you had this cage match, and they're talking about how, like, oh, this is great because they're going to be, you know, beat up for Day 1. I'm like, how, you know, Day 1's not, like, for a while, right? And then that's when I looked it up, and, yeah, it's 3 more Raws. And I'm like, this is a heavy angle to run when you're 3 weeks away. You know, even if you take 1 week off in order to – that's just, like, you know, the contract signing or whatever – you still have 2 more weeks to go, and then, you know, that's when Lashley, you know, came out. I'm like, now that makes sense, because now you have matchups of, you know, Kevin Owens teaming up with Big E versus Seth Rollins and Lashley, that sort of stuff that they like to do leading up to a 4-way. I'm sure it's going to end up being a 4-way by the time we get to it.
You're sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well. Javier is sure, so I'm more convinced. I mean, I don't, what else is there for Lashley?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he can skip a pay-per-view and then be excluded and be angry and then, you know, get the match at the Rumble. I mean, there are other paths. I'm less than sure. But yeah, I mean, let's see, you got 3 heels and a baby face. I guess it's better than 3 baby faces and a heel. So, yeah. William, back to you.
Yes. The one last topic I want to talk about, because to be honest, I didn't really, pay too much attention to the rest of the show. I just kind of had it in the background. This is kind of a general topic that I've been wondering about ever since crowds came back, which is that during the Uncertain Times era, the Thunderdome, you know, obviously the controlled the audio, and it was like, it was obvious that was the whole selling point of the Thunderdome, is that we had crowd noise back without actually putting crowds in the arena and putting them in risk. But now, ever since crowds have come back, there's like this untrust on whether or not they're still doing it. Even when they first came back, and it was like super, it was not as obvious if they were actually still doing it or not. And you had outside correspondents coming and say like, no, they're not doing it. Like, we really are this excited about them coming back, and that those hurt genuine reactions. But do you think crowds have been, how should I say it? Like, scarred by that whole era? Like, is there ever going to be a time when we can trust that what we're seeing on TV is the actual reaction?
Yeah. And there's a danger too. If you don't feel a responsibility to earn a genuine crowd response, you can end up getting away with things that you can't when the stakes are higher, like getting people to watch WrestleMania or buy tickets or buy merchandise or just keep tuning into a show. If you just sort of create this artificial facade of wrestlers being over that isn't genuine, it in the short run, it makes your product look more over, but you're just fooling yourself. I mean, it's like, you know, ignoring a health problem. Like, you know, you can mask it with drugs, but if you need treatment, you know, if you need to be doing so, or masking your health, in a way, you've got to, you know, you've got to own what the results of what you're doing is. And, WWE learned and practiced that craft of artificial crowd noise. And I honestly don't know what degree it's going on. Right now there's times where it seems obvious. Tonight, it seems like this would have been a good time to give Liv the courtesy of a huge crowd pop, and they didn't. I'm not sure. Javier, what's your feel on that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish we were back in the days where it was obvious when it was piped in noise, because now there are moments where it feels like it's piped in, and other moments where, like, so it's hard to tell. It really is hard to tell. And when you're, I mean, if you're only a casual fan, you're not really paying attention, I guess it does enhance it. But if you're someone who's paying attention and know the characters involved and stuff like that, it becomes distracting. And I was thinking the same thing about, you know, the Liv Morgan situation. It's like, when there was a, you know, a little bit of a groundswell, it's like, is that a pity, you know, that they're adding in or not? There was a moment where there were like some boos earlier, I forgot who, I think it might have been during Kevin Owens, where there was like it felt like they added boos and the boos weren't really there. So, but again, to me, it's distracting. I'd rather they just, you know, say, hey, look, we're not doing it. But in their situations, there are times where it feels like they're obviously doing it. So, I would definitely not, you know, I'm against it.
You are against it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. William, any follow up on that or another topic?
Yeah. Just real quick, a follow up on that. I think danger is kind of, time or state of mind for WWE, that people are, regardless of whether or not they're actually doing it, if people think that they are, that they're manipulating crowd noise or whatever, I think that's like a really bad sign for WWE, because I think one of the things that used to hold a lot of people over was, well, they're not doing things exactly how I like it, but at the very least, the crowd seems to agree with me that this push is not working, or this person should be a heel, or this person should be a babyface, or whatever. So you know what? I'll give them time to correct course because they have that crowd feedback. But now, if you can't really trust the crowd feedback, it's almost like you don't have a reason to hope for things better if they're just manipulating crowd noise, regardless of whether or not they're doing it. It's like, you know, abandon all hope, because they're just creating their own narrative. They don't even have to listen to you anymore when it comes to what works or what doesn't work. But that's all I have
to say. I think that's
an interesting...
Oh, sure, yeah. I think that's interesting, William, the idea that it actually, if you feel you're part of a community that is rejecting what WWE is doing, you might be more likely to watch. But if you feel that the community likes stuff that you don't, because the fake cheers are tricking you into thinking you're the only one who doesn't like what they're doing, then you can actually feel more alienated or and disengaged from the product more. I thought about it that way. Javier, is there a risk there WWE didn't think of? Not that they want – I doubt they're introspective enough to even think that that's possible. They're not just doing something that everybody loves, except for, you know, Roman. But, hey, any response is a good response, you know, back in the day. Same with Cena.
Yeah, I love the word alienate in that because, I mean, it might work for some people where – and that's kind of what I mean, the people who are kind of, like, in the know and really into the product. Because, yeah, if you want to – if you want to cheer Becky Lynch and all of a sudden you're there's this wall of boos – then you're like, hey, what's going on here? And if you're casual, then yeah, you're going to go, oh, well, you know, they're going to boo her, so I want to, you know, boo her. But the thing is, I'm not sure what percentage of people who really watch wrestling are, like, on that level of casual and who are a little bit more
right.
on the hardcore. And I know WWE is a little bit more towards the, you know, the casual side, but, you know, it's something definitely they should think about if that's what they're really doing. Because yeah, it's at some point you can only like lie to someone so long before they get angry, you know, and you know,
yeah.
and it's like, sometimes we're going to be taken for a ride, but when it's working against everything that your eyes are telling you and they're such a gaslighting you, then, you know, like those moments where, you know, there's a huge amount of boos and you see the people cheering. That's like, you know, I'm like, just stop and then just own it. And if you really don't want it, then just adjust.
All right. William, appreciate the call. Good topics, good conversation. Call again.
All right. Thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Yep, you too. Our number is 347-215-8558. It's not too late to call. 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad when you call. You can also email us if you're live streaming the show and don't want to have your voice on the show but do have thoughts. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's also where you can send emails for tomorrow's flagship, the Tuesday flagship with Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Up next, we go to Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, welcome to the show. What did you think of Raw tonight?
Good evening, Javier. Good to talk to you.
Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Good, good. I don't know if you guys saw it. You might have been, you know, prepping for the, you know, the live show here or not. But at the end, and because during the match they showed this little girl who was, like, totally behind Liv.
Yeah.
And then at the end, she was like close to tears, and you could see her father kind of leaning in and saying, you know, probably saying, you know, don't worry, it's all fake. But I mean, the look on her face was one of just total devastation. It was, I mean, it was actually a very human moment, you know, which is rare in wrestling. I just was wondering whether you guys caught that or not.
Yeah, it's in my notes. We have a new Miz girl.
Yeah.
I have to look at that. I was getting prepped for the show. So I was prepping for the show.
Yeah, one of the last shots of the show when Liv's in the ring by herself. And it's just, I mean, the cutest little girl. And they had shown her earlier in the match, you know, just like cheering when Liv was
going
to, you know, and then they showed her at the end and she was just devastated. It was just so sad. I agree with you.
You want people that invested. You want. That's a good thing. I mean, you want people, you want kids, everybody. You want people that invested.
Yeah. The only problem is that she's 7. I'm 64. I'm not that invested in it. But I will say this, that Liv, I thought on coming out, she was like, you know, walking straight. She gave a couple of hand slaps. I mean, I thought that was a much better attitude for her. I mean, she's a very attractive woman, and you know, you could put her, you know, in a potato sack and you know, guys would still want to see her. But keeping her away from that hip swivel and stuff. She just like walked straight, arms pumping, which I thought is a much better look for her.
Yes, I agree. She's refined and improved her, you know, her presentation in that way.
Yeah, it just helps to make her take her more seriously, you know, which is a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
It's weird. I think we're so far into the show already, and like we've just had passing references to the fact that they had a cage match on this show. I didn't even know. I mean, I'm not tuned into Twitter or anything. Like, you know, I'm not constantly. And I was like, cage match? What? Who? And the one problem I have with cage matches is, again, you know, going back to my history with WWE and wrestling, and I don't know whether what was the territory out by you?
The AWA?
AWA. When they had a cage match, it was like guys were bleeding all over the place and getting their, you know, heads raked against the thing. And Corey is saying, oh, you know, violence and this thing will rip your skin and stuff. And they're like getting bashed into the cage and like nothing happens to them. And I just like, I'm not, and I know WWE doesn't do blood unless it's accidental, you know, but it's like, I don't know, it loses all impact in a cage match to me for some, you know, and then did you know it was going to happen? I mean, I just didn't understand the cage match in this at this point.
Well, you've brought up a point I think we've been saying for somewhere in the neighborhood of like 35 years when it comes to WWE and cage matches. It just, they changed them, you know? I mean, the climb out rule, as opposed to just keep your opponent in the ring till they can't, you know, so they can't escape and they can't answer, you know, they can't kick out of a pin or get submitted. I mean, it's what WWE does. I mean, I know what to expect at this point. AEW is trying to change that. A bunch of other companies over the years doing it their way have changed it, also have kept up the tradition of it being, you know, more about violence. That's just not WWE's brand. That's not the business that they're in.
Yeah,
they pay lip service to it, but it's not what they do. And it hasn't been for a very long time. So to me, it's kind of baked in, and I think a whole generation of fans accept it. They have, you know, access to look back at old cage matches, and the AWA certainly did them violent and bloody. And that's what I grew up with, and that's, to me, what a cage match is. Javier, what do you think about WWE's cage match presentation, how they frame them? And, I mean, I just, you know, I don't think they're going to just start bleeding all over the place on USA Network. Vince McMahon has said too much about that in a harsh way, you know, about guys cutting themselves. Like, that's not the business that they're selling to their partners and their advertisers anymore.
Yeah, I mean, WWE's cage matches, they lost me when they let people walk out the door. That was it. I mean, I was fine with you had to climb out the cage because that, you know, that requires athleticism, and after you get beat up for a long time inside the cage, it's going to take a lot of work to get up there, you know, and it added to drama, like, you know, slowly climbing over the top, and then you had situations where you had a big guy, like, you know, Big Show, you know, and he has to escape. Well, how is he going to escape? He's obviously not going to escape from that. So he has to win by pin. That sort of stuff, you know, that had the drama where they added the door. It was like, oh, come on. You know, what's the point at this point? And, yeah, I mean, you know, they just don't really have and there was a point where they weren't really bleeding, but, you know, it felt like the cage was more impactful, particularly when it was the cell. You know, the cage is just like, you know, I mean, it's kind of neat, a little bit of a gimmick thing, and, you know, someone may, you know, take a little bit higher bump, but outside of that, it's like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think it elevates the match, and it makes the match feel more special. And so that's, I think that is there. I think when you see wrestlers entering a cage, it's going to be a level higher of a match in certain ways than the typical other matches that aren't in a cage. It's just not at the same level. Now, that said, WWE, you know, upped the ante with Hell in a Cell and made that their sort of signature, what used to be the old cage match. They built this larger structure, and they sell that as the next level up. So, I mean, I'm largely fine with it because, you know, it's like at some point you know, it's like with a 3-hour Raw. I mean, that's, you know, we brought it up every single show for like a year and a half, and then it's just like, okay, this isn't going away. And us talking about it isn't, you know, I mean, we drop it in now and then, you know, like you did, Javier, and there's nothing wrong with that, but the cage match thing, same thing. I mean, it's just, that's what they do, and we have to evaluate within that framework. And because the Hell in a Cell exists and they keep that special, I still think seeing people fight on top of a cage and get thrown into a cage adds something novel and different. And I thought tonight was, in a TV cage match way, it fit WWE's storytelling for this to be a cage match. Barely. How do you feel about that, Javier, in terms of, did this hit the threshold of being worthy of a cage match based on what happened last week and the build to the build up to the feud?
Yeah, I mean, it was still a really good match because you had Big E and Kevin Owens in it. So it's still good. But it felt like there wasn't much they couldn't have done outside of a cage. It did add a little bit.
But they were in a cage.
Yeah. I mean, and it does add like a little bit of imposing claustrophobic feel to it.
Yeah.
And it was more, it was weird because the whole like storyline was like, oh, this cage is going to kill these two guys, so they're not going to be ready for day one. Again, 3 weeks later, or, you know, about four weeks later. You know, and then it really wasn't, except for the, I guess you could also have done it without the big ending from the second rope. But it was like just for telling the story of Seth Rollins keeping them in the cage so they could continue hurting each other and trying to make it so that the match just kept going longer and longer. So in that part, it was cool. But and overall, I liked the match. But yeah, it definitely like, and it was one of the, you know, I guess one of the better cage matches. No, I mean, they've had a couple good ones lately, but, you know, there was a spate there that was just, you know, they were just there to have them.
How are you feeling about Big E's title reign at this point, Javier? Just the way, I mean, he's in main event matches, either at the top, or at the beginning or the end of a show, obviously holding his own, being competitive, being treated as a singles wrestler. The novelty of seeing him not part of New Day is not even part of the conversation anymore. And he's, you know, kind of a workhorse champion right now. He's out there, you know, working in front of, you know, millions of people as champion, looking like he belongs. And it's in a way, it's good. We just sort of take that as a given now when it comes to him. But I want to point out, like, he looks like he belongs in that role. We're not getting calls. We're not getting emails. It doesn't cross my mind. Oh, let's analyze like we did with Liv. Is Big E up for this? Are fans buying him in this? No, I don't think he's like this breakout star who's changing the trajectory of Raw ratings or WWE business, but it's not like a thing to talk about. Like, it's just, yeah, he's good. This works. That's my take. How about you?
Yeah, I'm similar vein. He's not like a transcendent champion, like what Reigns is, you know, pretty much is right now. I think he's like one of the top guys that you know, you can see, you know, draw, you know, go back and forth with Lashley on that level. I'm hoping he could get into the transcendent, you know, area. I felt the same way about Shingo when Shingo won, you know, and that was like mired in like a bunch of like bad stuff that happened in New Japan with injuries and stuff like that. So, you know, it took a while before I could finally, you know, get into him. I'm kind of the same place there with Big E, where I really like the stuff that he's done, and he's had a couple good, you know, wins, and I'd like to see him like tally some really good wins against, you know, the people that are coming for him, and to take on a bunch of challengers, beat them all, and then I think that's how you would elevate him. But I think that just takes time. So I do like what he's done so far, but to me, it's a good first step. I want to see more.
All right, Nick, back to you.
Yeah, real quick. I don't know whether it was my YouTube or not, but it seemed by the way they were talking. Why did they do the Lashley attack off camera while they were in? It seemed strange. It almost looked like they had a hard break on USA that they had to go to. The match went too long, and so they just, rather than have these guys lie around in the cage for 4 minutes, they had Lashley come in and then just recap it for everybody. It seemed strange to me. So I'm just wondering whether it was.
They've done that before, but not a lot. I don't have a problem with it. I wonder if Eric Bischoff's comments about how Raw feels totally produced and everything just happens when it's supposed to happen at the right place at the right time when cameras are there. Like, we just happen to be filming Vince McMahon on his phone when it just happens to be the exact moment that, Austin Theory knocks on the door. Or for the first time ever, we have of the filming of some random lady asking for an autograph backstage. Is that a thing? Does that happen? Why are we filming it? Oh, because we're in Memphis and it's to set up Jerry Lawler. Oh, the cage door is left open. Usually the referee has closed it by now. Why hasn't the referee closed the door like you're supposed to do as soon as no one's head is or legs are sticking out of the cage? Oh, it's because Seth is going to slam the door on their heads. Everything that happens that feels unnatural eventually gets explained because it's part of the script and they throw it in your face. So to me, I like this. And by the way, I like when a match ends before the last 20 seconds of the show and they do some sort of, you know, post-match interview or something, because then you're like, hey, maybe a near fall at 56 minutes into the hour or 54 minutes will actually be the end of the match. Anything they can do to shake up the idea that this is super, 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 super produced where nothing feels spontaneous, I'm for. I don't know if that's the spirit of why they did that, but it is a side benefit at least. Javier.
Yeah, I mean, I had a thought, the same thought, that it might have been like a commercial issue. I do like the fact that it happened off, because it really felt like they probably would have had him come out, hit Big E, and then cut the commercial, and then come back and see him, you know, lay waste and whatever. That kind of felt like that's what they would have done. But yeah, I mean, I do like the fact that it felt like, oh, wow, while we were in commercials, this thing happened. When they came back, did they immediately talk about the Big E thing, or did they say, or did they cut into, like, you know, the replays of the matches and then say, oh, and then Big E, and then last thing came out? Because in that case, it's like, you know, I don't know, I probably would have led with that.
Corey said something like, oh my God, this is just, it was crazy out here. Then they did show several scenes from the match before they showed Lashley, but it was kind of like, here's what happened, and then they showed match, and then Lashley killing everybody.
Yeah, that whole thing felt weird to me. That's why I was asking. It felt like it's almost like out of order, which is why I do think they're in a situation where like they ran out of time.
Yeah, my hunch is they intended to do it that way. I don't think they have hard breaks, but you know, they're so good about timing things out. I doubt it, but maybe we'll hear. You know, maybe I'll ask, or somebody will report that, you know, yeah, it was kind of a screw-up. I mean, they screwed up on the Edge-Miz segment. You don't see that very often, and we'll get to that too, where, you know, Edge kind of began to throw a punch at Miz, and he fell backwards, but they resumed in on Miz at that moment. So it just looked like Miz, like, slipped on a banana peel, and they did go to the replay. So, you know, mistakes happen. It's not that they don't, but usually not where you have to have a big angle happen off camera completely. Yeah, go ahead, Nick. Anything else?
Okay, I'll jump in. Last point, and then I'll let you guys go. I was really happy because I like Damian Priest. I think he's, you know, he's put in his time and he's getting his due, and I was really happy that in this match they didn't have him do the big eye, pissed off, rage win. You know, it's because I think they were just going way too heavy on that, just kind of, and it was making it cartoony rather than making it some kind of part of his personality. You were never really sure when it was going to happen. And so by not having it in every match, it makes it, it can help bring the audience in and say, oh, is he going to, what's going to happen here? You know? So I just thought it was good that they just had him beat Rude just as a wrestler, not as a crazed demon Damian Priest person.
Sure. Yeah. Javier, what do you think?
Yeah. Did they even mention during commentary the other, you know, the dark, you know, the Damian part
of him?
I don't
think so.
Because I don't remember them really. Yeah. I don't remember them really hitting that. So I'm wondering, you know, because if it is just a thing where they're thinking that, okay, when he faces Ziggler, he's going to go crazy and smash things, you would think that they would bring it up, that he, you know, talk about the darkness inside, because I remember for a while that was, they were hitting that hard. And I don't remember really them hitting it as hard as it here, and they just treated him like, you know, normal dude. So, you know, that's something to think about, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the way that WWE does their thing, they're like, you know, running a point home, and so, you know, driving a point, you know, home like, you know, crazy. So, I mean, if they could tone down a little bit of that, you know, the darkness inside and just have it be someone who gets angry, I'd be perfectly happy with that, because you do run the risk of turning him into more of a cartoon kind, you know, Hulk smash kind of character.
Yep, yep. All right, well, listen, you guys have a nice evening.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. We will continue to talk about Raw. We still got definitely more to talk about here. So, but always good to hear from you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Let's now move to our roundtable segment. He hasn't earned a jingle yet, Javier. Don't worry. But Darren Lilly is joining us. He is the Impact reporter for PWTorch.com. Javier, you've covered Impact for PW Torch. Darren, welcome to the roundtable segment.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. No music, but I get it. I'm working my way up.
Hey, Darren.
It'll come in time.
Yeah, we don't want to just give it away right away. You know, you gotta earn it. Well, good to hear from you, Darren.
Good to be here.
So, welcome. Yeah, so we'll kind of move into a little roundtable discussion here about some things that we haven't talked about yet.
Sure.
Darren, I'm hearing my voice on like a 2-second delay through your speakers. Is there a way to isolate the playback in your earpiece?
Yeah, hold on just a second.
Sure.
How's that?
See, you have to earn music. You have to earn your music by not having technical glitches like this. Yeah, no, it definitely
better?
Sounds better. Thanks. Yeah, I don't hear
cool.
it anymore.
Okay.
Cool. So Darren, first of all, I've got some things I want to bring up, but anything in particular that you want to follow up on we've already brought up or that you just want to bring up?
Oh, not really. I thought it was a decent show. It was a good beginning and end. I thought they did a good job of hyping up Liv Morgan and making her a credible contender. She's usually not called on to do as much as she did tonight. They usually have her in like the 3 to 4 minute matches. So it was good to see her in an extended match. And she did fine. I thought she was good. It showed that she could hang with Becky and the way they kind of framed it. So I thought that was good and that'll help her out going forward. The rest of the show in between, I kind of thought was a lot of filler. WWE tends to, towards the end of the year, kind of crawl to the finish line and to wrap up the end of the year till they get to Royal Rumble season. And I think we're kind of in that mode where they don't want to give away anything really big and they want to save that stuff for January and WrestleMania season. So I think that's where we're at right now. But, I mean, it was a decent show.
So I want to talk about Edge and Miz. Miz TV tonight followed up on what happened last week. Edge made his return. Miz complained, hey, why didn't I get, you know, why isn't a big deal being made of my return? No Maurice this week. I thought they did a nice job pulling from history that people know about with Miz. And Miz made points, you know, like, whoa, yeah, Edge, where were you? You know, why weren't you there? And Edge is like, hey, I was. You may not remember this. And you kind of blew me off. I wish somebody had given me the advice that I was willing to give you 7 years earlier when I got started. I don't want to get too bogged down in like how much this really matches history and how much of is it excusable what WWE and the veteran locker room allowed to happen to Miz when JBL, you know, was bullying him and Miz was being, you know, having to pay a special sort of dues because he came from reality TV and then get into how much did Miz bring on himself. That's not the story. The reality isn't important necessarily to the story they're telling. I thought it was a compelling story. I thought Edge and Miz did really good work with the material that they were given. Darren, I'll ask you first for your thoughts on that segment, and then Javier, when he's on, you can just jump right in.
I thought it was fine. Edge always comes through on the mic in these segments, and this was no exception. I thought he did really well, and Miz always holds his own as well. It's a compelling feud. I was when it was going on, I was just wondering how much of it of the stuff really happened. I just couldn't help but think about that. But I mean, it's all credible. But yeah, I don't know if that timeline matched up or not. There might be some holes there, but it was an entertaining segment. Not where I would have put Edge, but it's fine for, as I say, wrapping up the year and before they head off to the big stuff. So it's fine.
Javier, what'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have Edge versus Miz, it's about the only way you could probably make it interesting. And I tell you what, they're drawing from historical events, but they, like you mentioned, Aaron, that they don't necessarily need the line. They don't necessarily need to line up, but there's enough, you know, enough smoke and enough scuttlebutt from that era where you're like, oh, I can see this happening. I could understand this happening. And it's the idea that they both have their own point of view on the situation, and they both feel that they're right. And speaking of realism, you know, you can see Edge, you know, likely be the same kind of guy, because he was, when him and Christian came out, they were like different guys from what you would see in that era, and you know, them and the Hardys. So I could see them be people who get, you know, short shrifted from the people in the locker room, and you know, creating that link between them, whether it lines up or not, it doesn't matter, because the best stories have like a kernel of truth to them that you could draw on. And I think this might be an interesting feud. I'm not necessarily looking forward to the wrestling, but the story at least seems like it might be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, if you just look on paper and go, Edge is going to return and feud with Miz, you know, I think a lot of people just rightfully go, wait, what? You know, that's how you're going to use Edge. But again, this goes to even the Liv Morgan thing. Not every single feud has to be against two people who are, you know, respected and deemed worthy of being against that other person. And you need to have kind of some unconventional matchup sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you can use it to build a new star. Other times you do it just to see if there's chemistry. Other times you do it as a bridge just to get you to the next thing for the other two. And you make the most of it that you can. And I think that's what this is. They're invested in Miz. And, you know, Miz is a very WWE sports entertainment-y, you know, king of soft style professional wrestler. And I get why WWE has him around. You know, I mean, I get why he gets featured. And the idea of him and Edge going into a match, I'm interested in what kind of match that they end up having. And I think they can actually, for three more weeks, tell a compelling story to build it up more. This has exceeded what my expectations would have been had I had fair warning they were going to do something like this. And I think, you know, Edge, Miz is so smarmy that anytime he makes a point that you think might be good, you're like, crap. And I thought Edge did a good job going, no, that's not the whole story. And you're like, I knew it. I knew I knew Miz would frame it in a way that wasn't entirely fair. So I thought they pulled it off. And, you know, I assume Edge gets a win. Miz, you know, whines about something and pivots to something else. And Edge moves on to a feud against the top tier guy for, you know, WrestleMania season.
Well, I mean, consider the fact, I think this is going to hit, we're going to probably get a Edge and Beth Phoenix versus Miz and Maryse. I think that we'll end up seeing that before we see this actually blow off.
And I'm not against that. I mean, I think that's fine too. You know, I mean, you can, you know, if every time you critique WWE, it would require a complete overhaul of their entire roster, their entire philosophy, and everything that they've done to build themselves to this point. I mean, it can get – it's banging your head against a wall. That tag match makes sense given the way WWE tells their stories and presents their stars. And it's better than, like, John Cena and Nikki in a match. So, you know, it makes more sense to me than that. So, cool. Javier, is there any topic that you want to bring up for us to talk about that we haven't yet?
Skip me. I'll look over my notes.
All right, so
my turn to be surprised.
All right, so good. No, Darren, I'll bring up the use of Riddle and Randy Orton. I haven't talked to you about the dynamic between them. Do you enjoy it? Do you find it endearing and amusing? Do you find it, I just want to turn the channel, come on, let's move on from this? Where are you on it, and how did they do? So that's more of a broad topic. And then how did what they did tonight rate on your scale of their being featured and their dynamic being something that would be leaned into?
I wanted to hate it, but it's grown on me a little bit. It's you know, getting a little tiresome, but I enjoyed tonight's. It kind of astounds me how much Randy Orton will just go along with the stuff. He did the wig thing last week, and I mean, I think he would have come out on the camel in Saudi Arabia, but Vince nixed that, and that kind of surprises me. And he came out with a jacket tonight. So, I mean, he's going along with it. Seems like he's having fun with it, and he got to have the line about nope when they asked if Randy had anything to say tonight, which was actually pretty funny. So Randy seems to be having fun, and it's giving a little depth to his character. So I think it's good. as far as Riddle, he just seems like a complete goof. But they need to give his character a little more seriousness. And at some point, I expect that to happen because they have to split at some point. But they have to reel him in a little bit because he's just a little bit too silly. And he has so much to offer as a professional wrestler and as an athlete, and it's being overshadowed by the silliness, but hopefully they get him back on course.
Javier, same to you. I cracked up at Darren saying, I want to hate it, but it's grown on me. And I wonder how many people are in that camp of, really? You're doing this stupid scripted Riddle humor, and you in the back of your mind, you're like what Riddle could have been, and you're also thinking, you know, God, just Randy, give him an RKO and let's move on to other things. But you can tell WWE likes it.
Yeah, I actually liked it from the get-go. It just then became, like, the scripting just kind of got pretty bad. And, like, today, for example, like, about 75% of, if not less than that, was not really funny stuff. It was just, you know, stuff at the wall and things not really working. And it was the actual, when it was funny, it was the performance, not the material. So, I'd tighten up the writing more to make it work better. Cause like, you know, my favorite moment was Randy walking out. When he walked out from the blazer, you can see, if you read his lips, he drops an F bomb. Like, he can't believe he's wearing those. So, I mean, that's such a Randy thing. So that works. And when he's, you know, when they're doing stuff that's in character, you know, it works. And it works really well for Randy because Randy's really not really saying much stuff. It's all, you know, Riddle running his mouth a mile a minute. So that's why he even looks like even more of a goof, because of the stuff that he's being told to tell. Now, when he was on commentary, it was great because there were moments where he would talk about what's going on in the ring, like, intelligently for like a moment. And, you know, but it's funny because, I mean, that's kind of the story they were telling at one point, was that he's like an idiot savant where, you know, there'd be moments where he, like, you know, like, be really, say something really insightful. And they kind of like shied away from that, which I kind of wish they brought more, where he says like something philosophically deep. And then, you know, everybody just looks at him. I mean, that's kind of what that character, you know, he can't be completely a goof 24/7. Sometimes he has to say a pearl of wisdom. But yeah, I mean, I liked it a lot at first. I thought it worked better because I think it was fresh. Now, like, again, the scripting is like they ran out of stuff to have him say, and now we're, you know, the scripting is bad. Performance is good.
I think a lot of people are curious where Riddle and Orton are at WrestleMania. And does it seem like they're too far down the road of Orton seeming to not want to admit it, kind of like Darren at the beginning, like, I don't like this, and, oh, okay, it's actually okay, and it's growing on me. That's the journey that Randy Orton's character has been on. And I don't know how they get out of this and have it be believable. Like, what could Riddle do that would cause Randy, the Randy Orton we watched the last couple months, to snap and be vicious and mean? And I know Randy has a whole history that would predict that, but this current Randy, it's hard to see where how they get there. Javier, you first. Does that seem like more of a challenge than most tag teams breaking up to have a believable turn? Do you think they're just going to not do that? Because my vote right now is just have them both stay babyface and have them decide to split up and go against convention, break expectations, and I think people will be happy, and Riddle and Randy can go do relevant things separately as babyfaces. I don't think you have to do the predictable breakup.
Yeah, that would be awesome, but I don't know if that's in their DNA to actually do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd throw what I think would be best for the people involved would be to have Riddle be the one to turn on Randy, and then you know have that be like a moment where by turning him heel, that's how he drops a lot of the silliness stuff, and then you know people want to cheer Randy anyway, and that would be different. It would be something that you're not really as expecting as you know. Oh, Randy's obviously going to turn him at some point, you know, RKO him. It'd be a lot more surprising if the RKO comes from Riddle, you know, and then like build it from there. So
because Randy's been mean to Riddle, and a lot of times people in life, not all people, but a lot of times people are taking notes about how they're treated when they're not in power, and it comes back when they gain some power in a relationship, in a work situation, whatever it is. People are taking notes when they don't have leverage, and it can come back when you have leverage or when you grow to another kind of stage of your life. And, you know, with Riddle, is he taking notes at things that Randy is saying to him? When Riddle goes, aw, is in the back of his mind, is it starting to kind of feel like he's being disrespected? And does Riddle kind of snap? Does that seem in his character? Does that seem like the range he has? Maybe. And if he does, and they like test it off camera, and it's good, you know, maybe they can tell that story, you know, but I think we have to see more seeds being planted of Randy being, frankly, more of a dick to him than he has been, because I think a lot of people are sort of on Randy's side. We like Riddle, but yeah, he rambles and he's sort of an idiot. And, you know, he's sort of endearing in certain ways, but I totally get when Randy just had enough, you know, like we all have days like Randy's life is, we all have days like that. So we relate to Randy being like that almost all the time. So I think it's a challenge to turn Riddle heel, but I don't rule that out as like a really compelling possibility. I'm just not sure Riddle will be good at it and that it'll feel natural coming out of this. Darren, do you want to chime in on this?
Sure, yeah. At this point, I absolutely would not have Randy Orton turn on him. The fans don't want to see that, and I think the fan base would be bummed to see it. Orton's a legacy guy, so people don't want to boo him at this point. I think he's reached that point in his career where there's no point turning him heel because people like him and they've gotten used to him. But yes, like Javier was saying, I would certainly at some point turn Riddle because that could be the turning point for him. The character has to smarten up at some point, and I think it would add a lot to his character. But you could also do the route where they just go their separate ways, and every once in a while they can still have them team up and everything, acknowledge that. That might be the route to go, but I definitely wouldn't have Orton be the one to make the turn.
Javier, you've had a couple topics come up with one of your own. Did we use them up?
Well, I was thinking about the speaking of turning on your tag team partner. I haven't been following Raw as closely as I've been SmackDown. So I found the stuff with Nikki interesting with her frustrations at losing, and you know, and the stuff that happened with her. Please tell me, is that you feel like this might be a change in her character, maybe?
Whose character? Sorry.
Nikki.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned Nikki Bella earlier with Cena, and I'm like, what's going on here? Okay. Nikki A.S.H. Yes. Yes, I think they're doing something different with her. And there hasn't been a ton to it that you missed, Javier. But it is interesting, the Ripley-Nikki dynamic. And her kind of, you know, blowing off a pep talk, although Lawler, I don't know if he's being smarmy or not. I don't know. I don't blame her. But, yeah, I mean, if they've realized that despite her enthusiasm and earnestness in portraying the character, it's not working, that if they can transition that to something else, she's so, you know, she's one of the better in-ring workers they have. She's good on the microphone. It's just the character she's playing just is a swing and a miss for the most part with what they were going to do. And that just happens sometimes, you know, and I mean, she's coming up with ideas herself to try to stay relevant is used so much, but to try to kind of give Vince McMahon a reason and the writers a reason to utilize her. And, you know, the extra creative team members we've had on this show over the years have, you know, so often said, you've got to come up with your own ideas. You've got to present ideas and show that you're not just showing up and expecting people to get to figure out how to make you relevant to the eyes of Vince McMahon and to be able to fill TV time in the way that WWE gets paid a lot of money to fill TV time, despite diminishing audiences. So I'm curious what she's up to. I it seems like this might be an idea she has about how she wants to do it. And I think she's good with her acting range to be able to pull off something very different than this current character. And I think with her, because she's so kind of childlike and just sort of weird and how much she embraced almost a superhero, I would believe with her more than even Riddle that there'd be a sharp, dramatic turn to something else, like that she could end up being rather unpredictable in that way. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I was intrigued by that aspect of what happened tonight. I wonder if they've given up on the character. When it first started, I mean, it was a little bit out there, but I thought it was a lot of potential to connect with the fans, especially younger fans, and merchandising opportunities. But they never really went with it, and they just, I mean, they went what, kind of with the low-hanging fruit aspect of it, and it never really got over. So maybe they're going to cut their losses here or do like a heel turn or something like that. But I'm intrigued to where it could go, and she could take it in a lot of different directions, but I'm glad that that's somebody that they're invested in, at least giving her the airtime and the options to kind of explore the character or potential other characters. So it's good to see that part of it, but I regret that they're giving up on that they derailed the character so badly though in the first place, but we'll see where it goes.
Go ahead, Avery.
Yeah, because even if she goes back to a Sanity Nikki kind of her era of Sanity, you know, with Sanity, because
yep.
That fits much more with the Ripley character, you know.
Oh, good point, yeah.
You know, the manic thing. So if she were to, you know, so I mean, you could almost do with her what they did with Cactus Jack, where, you know, she has the Sanity Nikki and then she has the superhero Nikki, you know, and do something, you know, like that with her. So I think that would be an interesting avenue for them to examine.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're kind of, I don't know if we're at the very beginning of this, but they've got quite a bit more story to tell before we can kind of see what happens. But I think they ought to do something different. Speaking of that match, Queen Zelina, Javier, what do you think of what they've done with her with the Queen gimmick? I mean, God, it was just what, a month and a half ago, the feeling was, you know, she's just going to be on TV doing jobs and not really get a chance to show what, to put forth her strengths. Is this almost a best case scenario given what her strengths are, how she's being utilized right now as a really undersized heel, but personality wise, much better off being a heel than a face?
Yeah, I mean, at least they have her doing something, which is a positive. The character I'm not feeling, because it's not necessarily just the whole Queen stuff and her doing the fake accent and stuff. It's the fact that she's trying to do what Booker T used to do and, you know, then break into her normal accent when she gets angry. But she is not hitting it like Booker T did, you know? Because like even when she's doing the fake accent, it kind of seems like she's slipping in and out of it. So that stuff was like just I don't know. It's not that part of it's not working for me. But at least, you know, they're treating her with like she mattered, because I mean she has not mattered at all in the WWE in the entire period that she had been there until she, you know, until now. So at least it's something new and someone else, other people can play off of. I just wish that she'd nail that Queen gimmick down a little bit more.
Yeah. Garrett, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, she's way over the top, but it's kind of entertaining. But at least, as you were saying, they're invested in her, but you can tell with the airtime they're giving her and run with the tag team belt. She we might think, you know, it's a little bit out there, but she's framed as an important character. So, and she's getting that airtime. So good for her. We'll see where it goes after this feud and after the queen gimmick is over. But, you know, at least she's getting that time to be able to prove herself right now. So that's important.
Let's cover a little bit of what happened with AJ and Omos at this point. Another, you know, we talk about what's going on with Ripley and Nikki, certainly, and Riddle and Orton, a lot of tag team internal storylines going on here. They continue to tell the story of Omos and AJ having rifts, which AJ tried to downplay. Javier, does it seem like it's heading more towards Omos turning babyface against Styles, or did today lean a different direction? And what do you think is best? Because I can see a case being made for AJ coming out of this, turning a babyface and having another singles run as a babyface going up against Lashley and Seth and into the draft. You can heck, you could switch brands and get one more match of him against Reigns if Reigns is still around as a heel champ. I think there's some opponents there that are intriguing. But also, Omos just seems like, in the long run, he's destined to be the jolly giant who scares the pants off heels. Your thoughts?
Yeah, my feeling right now is they're gonna Omos is going to turn on and destroy AJ Styles. And it's going to be one of those, he turns babyface because the heel doesn't want him anymore kind of turns, which, you know, I'm not very much of a fan of, but I have a feeling that that's the direction I'm going to go. Cause he took a serious tone. AJ Styles did. Cause normally when he's, you know, playing up the heel thing, it's a little bit silly, but he was serious when almost walked away. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how they handle this. Cause it was a different demeanor that AJ hasn't shown for a bit. And, I hope that they do, give him another babyface run. Cause, he'll probably still end up losing against Omos if they wrestle. You know, I would guess, knowing how they book things, but give him, you know, a babyface run and you know, against you know, some of the people they have there. I know he's not going to go to SmackDown because he doesn't want to be on SmackDown because of familiar family reasons with you know, his kids in sports and stuff. Anybody who comes over on Raw, like, you know, feuding with Lashley and that sort of stuff is going to be, you know, great stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Let me read an email here from Zach in Texas. He said, gentlemen, Piper Niven and Bianca Belair had an excellent match tonight. Piper might be the best female monster heel since Bull Nakano. He's talking about Doudrop, for those who aren't aware. We don't assume knowledge here. She can actually move in the ring and work. Just as I was thinking they had Sting Vader, working big man who knew, make the big man look great, Piper hit a Vader bomb. Of course, the match was ruined by a countout. If you're going to book the match, just put Piper over. She's on more of an upward trajectory right now. As for the title match, compared to Trish and Lita, it was just silly because Lita was more over than Liv. The video package there pre-match was good. It might have helped if it had been aired last week instead of that hot mess of a promo Liv cut. That was easily Liv's best match, though. Becky did what she said she wanted to do, which is make Liv look good. So that's another feather in the goat's cap. The cheating, though, is such a crutch at this point. Becky is better than that, and it's so frustrating to see them not be able to get out of their own way and let her be what everyone wants her to be. So a case being made there for letting Becky just win this clean. And I think we don't do it a lot, but it would be best to look back in 3 months at what story they were telling and what stage we were at here to fully, fairly decide how to what degree we're going to condemn things that they do that we disagree with in this early stage. But having, you know, Hogan won clean against everybody they lined up against him, like pretty much during his initial WWF title run. I mean, why can't Becky do that? Well, because they don't have this pipeline of babyface opponents to feed her who are credible and over enough, and they sort of have their formula for booking. But, you know, that's got a point. There's something to be said for just let Becky win clean. Now, it's easier to have a babyface win clean because heels can make a lame excuse and move on. If you have the heel start winning clean, fans are going to start cheering her, especially if they have a preference for that to begin with, that they're fighting that headwind right now. And then you can kind of define down a whole babyface roster of women if they're all losing. And again, it just comes down to they don't have enough roster depth, which is their own doing, to even follow the formula Zach is saying, if we're not just going to always go back to, you know, Becky versus Belair as the only match where Becky is threatened. So I talk myself into, you know, kind of a conundrum there, just given the situation WWE has themselves in there. Darren, your thoughts on that? We spoke about some aspects of that earlier in the show too.
Yeah, I did not have a problem with Becky winning relatively clean and being strong. She's elevating people along the way, but it's looking like they want to keep her strong for the big money matches, Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't like the title switching back and forth and, you know, losing credibility. But as long as she's elevating some people up, and I certainly would say that Liv was elevated tonight, I do not have a problem with that whatsoever. So, yeah, I like the course that they're on, and it just makes Becky stronger. And it'll mean more when that title changes hands, I presumably coming up next year at some point, maybe, even though it is to Bianca, that's somebody that they're invested in. So I don't have a problem with that.
Anything more you want to add on that, Javier?
Oh, well, I mean, like we mentioned, I think the story is going to continue, which is why they have this, you know, unsatisfying ending. But in terms of like story-wise with heel cheating, I remember Ric Flair was a great wrestler, and what made me really hate him back in the day was the fact that he could win his matches legit, but he would always take the shortcut. And then that, you know,
yep.
And that's the thing, you know, I mean, it's something that's kind of been lost, and it really is up to commentary to really, you know, nail it home that, you know, what she did was not, you know, she could have won the match cleanly, but instead she decided to cheat, take a shortcut. And, you know, you had Cody, you know, Corey Graves, you know, obviously he's the heel saying, oh, this is great, whatever. And then, you know, you needed to have a voice there really hit hard that it's like, why? You didn't prove anything. But, yeah, I mean, I'm fine with, you know, I like it that the heels, you know, take that shortcut, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, yep. All right, so my final topic, and if you guys have anything else you want to add before we wrap up, feel free after this. Vince McMahon and Austin Theory. It's just kind of weird. Austin Theory like doing jumping jacks for Vince and then go, you know, says impress me, and he's like unzips and shows off his chest and his abs, and Vince is like, no, show me something with your brain, and then it turns into, you know, an attack and a selfie of Balor. What do you think, Javier, of Vince's return to TV? And what we're supposed to think is going on with Austin Theory, and what is going on with Austin Theory, and if it's good for him.
Yeah, you could put this on the guilty pleasure for me. It's kind of surprising that Austin Theory comes up. They're kind of keeping sort of the same character that he was when he was on NXT. I thought they would kind of change that up, because I don't know what the No, I lie. I kind of see where they can go from there. But the idea that he is conniving and sneaky, I think, is what they're doing. That Vince is really going to show, you know, bring that out. Because, like, yeah, he's coming out and he looks like a goofball and stuff like that. Sort of like Riddle, you know, goofball, sort of like Riddle, but he has also a mean streak. Because when Vince said, hey, you know, do something, and he went after Balor, that was like, you know, that's what Vince wanted. And that, you know, that was, you know, he's going to get his own by hurting somebody else. And I it's interesting. I'm really curious where this is heading.
Do you think it's ultimately good that Austin Theory is sharing TV time with Vince McMahon, even if Vince is, you know, being Vince, you know, being, I don't know, verbally abusive, being the Dom? I don't know what he's doing with Theory, mind-effing him. Is it ultimately like just an enviable position, no matter how you're treated, that, my God, he's sharing TV time with Vince McMahon when Vince has been very scarce on TV for years. And it just sort of says to people in a meta sense, Vince wouldn't be doing this if he didn't think Austin Theory was worth something. I don't think people look at Theory as like Hornswoggle, you know, like a comedy act, and it's just, or R-Truth. It's not just purely for comedy. Austin Theory has more. And so it kind of just flips him into the side of Vince's, in his own mind, having fun right now and trying to put on entertaining TV as an excuse for him to be on TV. But he wouldn't do this if he didn't see that there was an upside in Austin Theory. Are you on that side of things, or are there like 20 other better ways to protect Austin Theory if you see a big future in him than what they're doing here?
No, I mean, just storyline-based, you could argue one way or the other, but just the fact that he's sharing screen time multiple times with Vince McMahon, assuming that Vince doesn't get tired of him, you know.
Right.
Because that's the thing. It could go really well for him or really poorly for him, one of the two. But I could sort of see, like, a storyline where I could see them chart a storyline where by the end and everything said and done, Vince McMahon crafted Triple H 2.0 out of Austin Theory, you know, down the road. And, you know, right now he's kind of like a goofball, which, you know, it could, you know, be damaging in certain ways. But if the idea is that he's going to mold him into being this sort of, like, you know, cerebral assassin kind of character, you know, down the road, you know, he is young, so he could be developed over a longer period of time until the story of him, you know, kind of screwing up around Vince, and then eventually it clicks, he gets it, and then he becomes an actual threat.
Darren, your thoughts?
Yeah, in theory, being associated with Vince kind of gives him the rub, I guess. But for me, last week when he got slapped, and he didn't do anything back, I just thought that made the character look weak, and it just fined him down because, like, you know, your big superstars, you know, how would a Randy Orton react or something like that? They wouldn't just accept that and just go off like a little puppy dog, and that's what he did. And I thought that made the character look weak. I think he's in the hole. He's got to climb out of that now. So I think it was a detriment. Sure, it helps being on screen with a, you know, a big character like Vince, of course, but I mean, you have to use that time wisely, and I don't think that was the best use. I thought it defined him down. I was not a fan of how he was booked last week. And then the memory of that in this week, it was fine, and I'm sure he'll have a good match with Balor and everything. But I mean, he's working out of the hole to me.
All right, go ahead. Well, yeah, Javier. Yeah.
Well, because what I think about that scene and what they're doing, it's kind of like in a movie where you have a guy who's training for something, and then like you see the beginning part of the training montage, and he's an idiot and he's screwing up and stuff like that. And then he trains, and then all of a sudden you see him, like, doing everything right. If you're going to pay this off, when he finally gets it together, Vince slaps him, and he slaps Vince back. That's the payoff to that. So
good
as long
point.
As you get a payoff to that,
yep.
You know, it salvages that because it shows growth in the character. Because, again, he's young. So it makes sense that he's, you know, right now he is – on a lower thing, you know, lower level, if you're going to show his growth on TV.
He's Greg to Tom, using a Succession analogy for those who have been watching that HBO series. And oh my God, with last night's episode, unbelievable. But there is a kind of a Greg Tom thing going on here. I have no idea if it's intentional or not, but it can work. I mean, Vince and Tom are very different people. Vince is certainly more Logan, but the dynamic there is something they could play off of. So I throw that in there.
Yeah, I haven't watched it. So.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Just, Lily, have you, Darren, Lily, have you been watching Succession?
I have not seen it, but it sounds like something I should absolutely watch.
Everybody should absolutely watch it. It's so good. Oh my God. Yeah, today was like I was in a different place because of last night's episode. It was just in multiple ways. Jaw-dropping, and it's going to make people very careful about how they text, too. I'll just say that. Well, not everybody would follow the same problem that was in the show last night, but just in general, check who you're sending to before you hit send. Anything else you want to – just forget I said anything and start watching the series. You won't know when it was. Darren, anything else you want to close with?
Not really. I do want to point out that I was listening. I cannot recall exactly what show it was that you were doing. It was a couple weeks ago. Might have been the Todd Martin show, but at the very end, you mentioned that Pluto has a Price is Right channel that shows the 24 hours of Price is Right episodes from the 80s. that is an absolute game changer. And the takeaway is to always listen to the Torch podcast all the way through and to go VIP.
Yeah, have you been watching?
Yes.
Darren, have you been watching it?
There's such,
I have it on in the background right. I have it on in the background right now. If you haven't heard of Maypo oatmeal for $1.29 or soup starter, if you forgot about that, I got that on in the background right now. That is the background of my life, like half the time now.
That is
summer
so
break memories.
I'm glad that you have introduced that to my world. So thank you.
That's great. It's on your TV, folks. If you have Roku or Apple, it's a Pluto app. That's a Bob Barker era, 24/7. Price is Right. Javier, any closing words for you?
Well, I'll throw in my own plug.
Yeah.
You really need to start putting in a disclaimer on the fix, because I mean, sometimes I joke around it, but you literally almost got me killed the other day as I'm driving on the Palmetto, and it was the little game that you were playing, I think, on the mailbag with, and you, your first draft pick was Pac.
Yep.
And just, I already knew, I'm like, that he's not so eligible. And then it was Todd Barnes' reaction.
Yes.
And I was trying not to laugh because I knew if I started laughing, my eyes would tear up.
Yep.
I tried to hold it up, and I started getting lightheaded when I actually started seeing dots. And I'm driving on the Palmetto, and I'm like, and I mean, I literally had to like shake my, like, you know, force myself away, because I'm like, you know, I'm like, oh my god, you said it's gonna kill me. So yeah, so I mean, it is a, you
oh
know.
My god.
Yeah,
yep.
So disclaimers, please. be careful if you're listening to this. But yeah, so that was my plug for the fix. Listen while driving.
Wow.
So,
I'm almost tearing up at your reaction to that classic moment. The exasperation was just – and
that
yeah.
was what sold it. And like, you know, it was like – You know,
the delay, the delay too. Like there was just that silence, and then
and
it
the
just filled up.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. So that was awesome moment.
Cool.
Awesome podcasting.
I didn't like explain it fully because I just want people to go VIP and listen to last week's mailbag, because it's hard to, you know, it has to be experienced in real time. So, you know, pwtorch.com/govip, subscribe. You can subscribe just to the feed of the fix and be happy. You don't have to feel like you have to listen to everything we do. We got a little something, you know, for, we've got a lot of, we cover a lot of topics in a lot of different ways. And there's more than just a little something for everybody in terms of the selection, but individual feeds for all the different shows, and then a catch-all feed for all of them too. So cool. Darren, I'm glad that you filled in for Javier. I don't know where he is tonight. We needed someone to do the roundtable segment to help close out the show. So appreciate that. Check out Darren's great coverage of Impact Wrestling. Darren, do you know right off how long you've been doing Impact coverage for us now?
I want to say it's been about a year and a half.
God, I would have guessed.
Last year.
Okay, yeah, I would have guessed closer to two, or I'd say I would have guessed more than two. But yeah, no, that's great. I mean, you do great for covering that company. And Javier, tell people how they can find your work.
The primers for the pay-per-views and the New Japan Pride podcast. That's also a VIP one. Currently hiatus before Best of Super Juniors, because, you know, I got work situation going on, and hoping to come back for Wrestle Kingdom, and covering a lot. I cover Strong there a lot, which is the Japanese, the American branch of New Japan, and a lot of up and coming wrestlers and stuff that you could experience there. So yeah, check that out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at JMachadoLK. Easy follow. I'll follow you back. And I never tweet anything, so.
Perfect. What a pitch.
I'm trying to have the most amount of followers, and maybe even get a check mark without tweeting anything ever. That's my new goal in life. Looking forward.
Now my goal is that in two years from now, when you have a bunch of followers and you haven't posted anything, I want to hack into your account and post something and ruin it all.
Yep.
Like have a big day of posting a bunch of stuff. Ruin your fun. All right. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Javier. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. Don't forget, if you're attending a future show, I haven't really been plugging it a lot because I don't know, for Friday, but we'd love to hear from on-site correspondents as often as possible. So drop me an email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let me know if you're going to be at a Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown and are willing to come on afterwards to talk to us on this show about your in-arena experience. And, hey, anything outside the arena, too, you know. Crowd fights, crowd chants, whatever. Sometimes things happen that are fun outside before and after the show, too. And don't forget, you can send emails to WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com for tomorrow's Tuesday flagship with Jason Powell. So until then, Wade Keller thanking you, and on behalf of Javier and Darren, signing off.